Thank you for helping us make Budget Again last year. Thanks to your support, Lutheran Public Radio has been independent and in the black for more than 2.5 years. You've heard us say, now only our listeners can cancel us, and we mean it. Thanks for listening, thanks for your prayers, thanks for your financial support, and we're looking forward to standing with you again in 2011. Christ-centered, cross-focused talk radio for the world. Issues, etc. We spoke earlier today with Wendy Wright of Concerned Women for America about multiple murder charges being brought against an abortion provider in Philadelphia. How did it get to that point? How could it be that law enforcement turned a blind eye to much of what was going on there? Why is abortion given a pass? I can tell you why. Margaret Sanger, founder of Planned Parenthood, has won the debate in America. Abortion is free and on demand. It's encouraged by the state, and it's hard to say that the debate is still going on. And in fact, as we'll find out in our conversation with Dr. Alan Carlson, she did it with the help of some Christians. Joining us to talk about the propaganda campaign of the founder of Planned Parenthood, Margaret Sanger, Alan Carlson. He's president of the Howard Center for Family, Religion, and Society, author of the books Conjugal America and The Natural Family, and a forthcoming publication titled Godly Seed, American Evangelicals Confront Birth Control. He's also written an article in the latest issue of Touchstone magazine titled Sanger's Victory. Dr. Carlson, welcome back.
Happy to be with you.
Do you think Planned Parenthood has turned out as Margaret Sanger, its founder, would have hoped?
Well, yes and no. On the yes side, she certainly wanted to see birth control and abortion not only legalized, but widely accepted, promoted by the government, subsidized in various ways by the state. She wanted to see birth control clinics everywhere. She wanted to see the religious debate over birth control really largely put to an end. So in all those ways, I think she'd be very pleased where Planned Parenthood is today. She also had a sort of a different vision of what the future society would be like. She was like many other American thinkers back in the 19-teens, 1920s, 1930s, very interested in the cause of eugenics. And I think she would have wanted to see a much greater eugenic emphasis, that is, a much more emphasis on controlled breeding and much more emphasis on sterilization among those deemed unfit than we see today.
What is eugenics, and what was her bigger vision? I mean, how would America have turned out had she had her way eugenics-wise?
Well, first, eugenics is the sort of the science, or many would say the pseudoscience of human breeding, that human beings should breed like we breed racehorses or like we breed purebred dogs. That is, you would choose your mate very scientifically. Produce children that would be of a quote-unquote a superior stock. All would be carefully planned. Mistakes would not be allowed to happen. Again, the goal, though, was to improve, quote-unquote, to improve the race. So I think Margaret Sanger would have wanted to see far more abortions among groups that she did not like. She was pretty coy on this often, but sometimes she made it quite explicit that she thought African Americans were a group that was given to poverty, given to laziness, and so on. We're not a good group. Certainly, some of her early Planned Parenthood supporters thought the Puerto Ricans should be eliminated as a people. At least that was what they said privately in their correspondence. So it would have been a much more race-conscious society, a society where people like her would be the ones who would be allowed to reproduce and have fairly large but well-planned families.
How did Margaret Sanger succeed in framing the debate? She was actually rather wickedly ingenious about this entire thing. And spin Christians in this debate to accept her presuppositions?
Well, her original opponent was Anthony Comstock, the aging anti-vice crusader who had succeeded as an evangelical Protestant in winning restrictions and strong controls on the availability of birth control and birth control information throughout the United States, both a sweeping federal law, the Comstock Law, and many Comstock laws in all the states. In fact, his last campaign was to try to put her in jail. He died before he succeeded in that. But she came along. She realized that in order to win, she had to have a religious cover. She had to have a sacred canopy on the cause of birth control. And she figured that the way to do that was to demonize the Roman Catholic Church and to basically just not tell the truth. The truth is that the anti-birth control laws in America were the product of evangelical Protestant concern, exclusively so. She said, started saying, no, it was all caused by the Catholics. This was a Catholic scheme to subvert American freedoms. And she simply made the Catholic Church her scapegoat. She refused to even acknowledge that Protestant churches were also opposed, uniformly opposed, really, through 1930. She just ignored them and started cultivating clergy alliances among Protestants, particularly in the Episcopalian Church at the beginning, but also some prominent liberal Baptists were brought along. And she just reframed the debate that it's the Catholic Church imposing its morality on America. Protestants are fighting for religious freedom. Again, that had nothing to do with the real debate. But you know what? It worked. She was extremely clever. By the late 1930s, she had largely won that argument.
So she capitalized on anti-Roman Catholicism.
Very much so. She also capitalized, again, on the eugenics cause. What's forgotten today is that this was just not a cause of Margaret Sanger and some scientists, but many members of the clergy bought into it, particularly at the mainline Protestant churches. The American Eugenics Society sponsored a biannual eugenics sermon contest, and wildly popular. They get hundreds of submissions from pastors who had given a eugenics sermon. These are really weird things to read, but basically would cast Jesus as the ultimate eugenicist. To build the kingdom of God on earth was to craft a better human material, and Jesus wanted us to use birth control and even abortion and sterilization to produce a pure Christian stock. It all sounds pretty bizarre, but in fact, these were mainstream pastors, very popular pastors, some of the leading religious figures of the 1920s and 30s doing these sermons. And so she played on that, too, very effectively. It's a somewhat shameful episode in American Protestant history.
What was the... you talk about the big breakthrough that she had actually came from the Anglicans, then the Lambeth Conference. What happened there?
Well, it's the Lambeth Conference in England in 1930. This was the first time that that a major religious group had endorsed, at least to some degree, it was not a sweeping endorsement, but a cautionary endorsement of birth control. It was the first time that had happened. And she'd been lobbying the Anglicans for 5 or 6 years. She was successful in that, and then the year following, the Federal Council of Churches, a committee of that group, again, all Protestants, issued a similar statement. It almost blew the council apart, but for her, it was a great achievement. And again, her lobbying efforts and a little later on, her secret contributions to the Federal Council of Churches of Christ were what made this happen. So again, she was a very effective lobbyist. She knew how to divide the Christians. She knew how to play on old animosities. And she also knew how to use eugenics as a way of selling birth control.
I mean, this is really remarkable. I mean, I think even Planned Parenthood advocates today, who in many ways have been as deft as Margaret Sanger in aligning themselves with liberal Christianity to an even greater degree, seem to just be pulling pages right out of her playbook.
No, she was good, and she was ruthless. She was good. She was single-minded. I can't say I admire her because I don't. I think the cause she was involved in was deeply anti-Christian and deeply hostile to human life. But with that said, I have to tip my hat to someone who knew how to get what she wanted and knew how to play the Christians. She knew how to use Christian divisions to sweep away 1,800 years of Christian consensus on sexuality and marriage.
Did the Roman Catholic Church ever find occasion to respond specifically to Margaret Sanger or to her ideas?
Her great foe during the 1920s and 30s was Father John Ryan. He was a professor of social ethics at the Catholic University of America. He was the one who really did refine the Catholic view on birth control and contraception, starting in 1915-1916. He, in many ways, codified it. He certainly even had a hand when Pope Pius XI issued his encyclical on marriage in 1931, Casti Canubi. Again, Father Ryan was a major figure in that. But he and Margaret Sanger were constantly clashing swords. With that said, she usually got the better of the argument, not because she was a better thinker. Actually, Professor Ryan was a very bright man, very able advocate for the family wage, and a defender of Christian marital sexual ethics. But again, she always managed to wind up placing him, again, as a spokesman for Romanist conspiracies that were trying to undo American liberties. Again, that's not what had been going on relative to birth control laws in America. These had been Protestant products. The Catholic Church had just sort of sat on the sidelines, silently cheering, wishing the Protestants well. But she managed, again, this is so fundamental in any public debate. If you can change the terms of debate and set the terms as you want, you're probably going to win. And that's what she succeeded in doing. And again, to be frank, with the exception of fundamentalists and through the late 1930s, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, the Christians were to blame. Fortunately, those groups continued to oppose contraception really up until World War II and did so not so effectively, but at least they maintained their own integrity.
Well, when we come back, he has mentioned several times the eugenics angle in Margaret Sanger's rhetoric, debate, and argument, with which she had some Christian allies. When did the eugenics angle disappear from Sanger's or her allies' rhetoric? We'll find out after this. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois is happy to support the Christ-centered, cross-focused ministry of Issues Etc. Join us for worship, Bible classes, youth ministry, and other opportunities to grow in Christ. We have a Christian day school for children in preschool to 8th grade. We are located at 1300 Beltline Road. Call us at 618-344-3151 or visit www.goodshepherdcollinsville.org.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Hi, this is Kate in Japan, and I'm commenting on the program you had about the Unification Church.
Thanks to God's gift of the Internet, people are listening to Issues Etc. around the world.
The most important point is to say I love your show and thank you for doing what you do. Bye from Japan.
Old theology, new technology, Issues Etc. worldwide. Listen to what you want, when you want, wherever you are. Issues Etc. IssuesETC.org.
The latest edition of the online Issues Etc. journal is out. It contains an article that I've written titled The Theology of Jesus. What's the connection between the Church's Confession of Christ and her Confession of the Trinity? Find out with the latest Issues Etc. journal. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Pastor Mason Beecroft writes about the false promises of Pop American Christianity. Get your copy of the latest Issues Etc. journal by sending your name and email address to journal@issuesetc.org.
You can't copy the murder and cooperate it. Everywhere you look now, murder and cooperate
it. We're talking about the propaganda campaign of founder of Planned Parenthood, Margaret Sanger. Alan Carlson is our guest of the Howard Center. Folks, here's a way that you can help us defend life from beginning to end in the new year. Join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. It's our monthly or annual giving program. Membership benefits include items like books, broadcast transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can find out more about the Issues Etc. Reformation Club at our website, issuesetc.org. Look for the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses. It's the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. Dr. Carlson, you mentioned before the strong emphasis from Sanger and her allies on eugenics, eugenics sermon contests and things like that. When did that angle disappear from Sanger's or her allies' rhetoric?
Well, the rhetoric began to be troubled shortly after World War II, when the potential of eugenics to become a massively destructive and massively evil became clear in not National Socialist or Nazi Germany. With that said, though, eugenics was still being talked about in positive ways really until about 1950. And a kind of soft eugenics managed to survive within the liberal American Protestant churches really until the early 1960s. There's a fine book by historian Amy Laura Hall called Conceiving Parenthood, American Protestantism and the Spirit of Reproduction. Came from Erdmann's a few years ago, and she ably shows that a form of soft eugenics involving rigorous family planning, well-spaced, well-gender-balanced children and families was part of the Protestant image on the liberal Protestant side, really into the early 1960s. So, like I say, Sanger's victory within the churches was also, at least within the liberal mainline churches, was also fairly extensive and fairly complete.
You mentioned the fundamentalists, and you mentioned the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod. You said that their response was perhaps not as effective as it could have been. How did they respond specifically, and how could they have responded, or was it even possible for them at that time, at least I guess in the 30s, to wrest the debate back into terms that didn't favor Margaret Sanger and her organization?
Well, they could have. I think the group that did the best job on the fundamentalist evangelical side was probably the Moody Bible Institute. The Moody Bible Institute repeatedly ran fine articles defending historic Christian sexual ethics, defending the Christian consent, the old Christian consensus that the intentional limitations of birth was through artificial birth control or through birth control was wrong, was a sin. They did a pretty good job. Of course, by the 1930s, a lot of attention was being focused on other social issues, the Great Depression, widespread poverty, unemployment, and so on. But again, the Missouri Synod, while Margaret Sanger most of the time lashed out just at the Catholic Church, once in a while she'd also slash out at the wicked Missouri Synod Lutherans. They did pretty well up until World War II. It was during and right after World War II that first the Missouri Synod, under the influence of Professor Ray Winkle at the seminary there, basically completely reversed course and accepted Margaret Sanger, even praised her as a great moral social leader. That took place after World War II. The evangelicals, it was really around 1960 that you began to see them also joining the consensus surrounding Margaret Sanger and birth control, that it was a positive good. At that point, heavily the argument had to do with the world was becoming overpopulated. What else could they have done? They could have focused on the radical giftedness of all life. They could have had faith that God will provide, that global overpopulation is not going to lead to mass starvation, which in fact it didn't. The world is better fed today than it's ever been. Again, there was a loss of faith in God's providence, and very few people on the Protestant side, by the end of the 1960s, had managed to hold to that faith. A few did, but not many.
So paint the canvas for us, if you would. How broad has Margaret Sanger's victory been, both against and allied with American Christianity?
Well, again, I think her victory in the broad sweep was quite complete. She herself said repeatedly many times that she could never win unless she had at least the bulk of the Protestant churches on her side. That was her central goal, was to bring them over. She did this through several committees. She did it by working with the eugenics movement, which also had clergy committees. And she proved to be the stronger advocate. There was a lot of confusion on the Protestant side. In particular, the people that should have stood up didn't. They found it much easier to go with the flow of the culture. And so her victory, like I say, she had to, in some ways, I guess you'd say, back off the eugenic argument by the late 1940s, but in every other way, her victory was quite complete. And it could never have happened without the support of her Protestant allies.
I think about the American landscape on this issue even today, as you pointed out in your first response, with legalized government-funded and government-encouraged abortion policies and other policies regarding birth control. I wonder then, finally, has the lines on the battleground shifted much since Sanger's initial victory with Christians?
Well, they're shifting right now because there are pockets of religious communities in America who have avoided what we called Sangerism, and I think they're poised to dominate the future. There's a fine book I just finished reading. I know this is not on our agenda, but it's by Eric Kaufman, a British scholar, called "Shall the Religious Inherit the Earth?" And his answer is yes, they will. Religious people who are still committed to large families and to focus on children are the ones who will shape the future. And he produces some quite startling numbers and projections. They're the ones who are, and who are we talking about? Well, it's everybody from the Old Order Amish to the Quiverful Evangelical movement to traditional Latin Mass Catholics to American Mormons to Hasidic Jews. All groups that have managed to escape, I guess you'd say, the Gospel of Sanger, and all of whom are growing quite rapidly, and as he puts it, and he's not a Christian himself, he's a secular liberal, they will dominate and control the future.
Dr. Alan Carlson is president of the Howard Center for Family, Religion, and Society, author of the books Conjugal America and The Natural Family, and a forthcoming publication titled Godly Seed, American Evangelicals Confront Birth Control. He's also written a fascinating article in the latest issue of Touchstone Magazine titled Sanger's Victory. We'll post a link to the Howard Center at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Carlson, thank you very much.
Happy to be with you.
Our Issues Etc. book of the month for January is called Lutheran Spirituality, Life as God's Child. It's one of those must-have books. We have a lot of books of the month, and they're all good. Every once in a while, we have one that kind of emerges as the must-have. Things like this book, Lutheran Spirituality or Spirituality of the Cross, or Dying to Live, all those books that really capture the essence of Reformation theology. This is one of them. Lutheran Spirituality, Life as God's Child. Find out more about it at our website. You can browse there before you buy, issuesetc.org, or order Lutheran Spirituality, Life as God's Child from Concordia Publishing House. Their toll-free number, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. Ask for the Issues Etc. book of the month for January, Lutheran Spirituality. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll continue our series on apparent contradictions in the Bible. Dr. Andrew Steinman of Concordia University Chicago will be our guest. Tomorrow's topic, the descent of David, the descendants of David, they're listed in 2 Samuel 12 and 1 Chronicles 3, and they appear to differ from one another. Also tomorrow, we'll have our weekly segment on media coverage of religion with our friends at GetReligion.org. Friday, we'll be talking with Dr. Frank Beckwith of Baylor University about defending life. It's a subject near and dear to his heart. Also Friday, we'll play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. Okay, the debate is lost so far. That means we need to reframe the debate in terms of the truth, not in terms of the lies of eugenics or the lies of feminism, or the lies of the pro-abortion activists, or the lies of those who want to foist contraception on everyone, the lies of really forces that are allied from the time of Margaret Sanger and before against the family and against children. We need to reframe the debate in terms of the truth, not in terms of the lies. The strongest thing we have in our favor in the public debate, in defense of the unborn, and in defense of the family and of children, is the truth about the unborn, the truth about the family, the truth about parenthood, the truth about children. That will reframe the debate. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.